Hello again. I'm Kathleen Dunn. You're listening to the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio for this Wednesday, the 10th of February. About 32%, this is an extraordinarily high figure, of children and adolescents today, 25 million children, are obese or overweight. That's according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. And they also say that those extra pounds put children at a greater risk of developing a host of debilitating and costly diseases, type 2 diabetes, high blood pressure, and high cholesterol. With that in mind, and the motivating force behind the campaign that First Lady Michelle Obama announced yesterday, Let's Move on Child Obesity, the goal to eliminate childhood obesity in a generation. She says, we don't have time to wait. We've got to stop citing statistics and wringing our hands and feeling guilty and get going on this issue. So what are the best ways to get going on this issue? What's causing the problem? We're delighted to have two guests with us this hour. Will Allen is joining us by phone this morning from Washington, D.C., where everybody is stranded, it would appear, for most of the week. He is the CEO of Growing Power. Those of you who live in Wisconsin are highly familiar with his work, and now people all over the world are becoming quite familiar with his work. Growing Power is a national nonprofit organization and land trust supporting people from diverse backgrounds and the environments in which they live by helping to provide equal access to healthy, high-quality, safe, and affordable food for people in all communities. Will spoke at the announcement of Let's Move yesterday with the First Lady in Washington, D.C. He has a very interesting background. He started his life as the youngest of six sons of a South Carolina sharecropper, and learned the dawn-to-dusk routine of working the land from the time he was a very young person. He built successful careers in professional basketball and corporate marketing, and now he founded Growing Power, which the ideas behind this are spreading all over the world. He received a MacArthur Foundation Genius Grant in 2008, and we're very happy to have him with us. Hello, Will. Thanks so much for being with us.
How are you, Kathleen?
I'm okay.
Great
to have you with us. Let me introduce our other guests, and then I want to hear all about what happened yesterday. Jill Camber-Davidson is also with us, nutrition education consultant with the Wisconsin Department of Public Transportation. And Jill, thank you so much for being with us. Public instruction. I'm sorry. I don't know what I was thinking about driving around. Public instruction. Thank you so much, Jill, for being with us.
Great. Thank you, Kathleen. Great to be here.
Yeah, great to be here as well. Have you here. Well, let's talk about what happened when the First Lady announced this initiative. I'm sure that you said that it's time for this to happen. You've been working on this issue for a long time, haven't you?
Yeah, we really have. And I guess the encouraging piece was that what she said kind of concurred with what I've been saying for a long time is let's get into some action. You know, we've been talking about studying the issue of childhood obesity and lack of food choices and our kids really not getting good food in their lives from really prenatal on, and especially in our schools where the food is so bad and full of lots of calories and salt and sugar. So having this reach the level of having the First Lady get behind us and some real dollars being put into this effort is going to make a huge difference.
Mm-hmm. Jill, why do so many young people, and it's not just young people, the number of people who are obese or overweight who are adults is even higher, but that's an incredible statistic. One-third of young people who you think would be active and burning off calories are obese or overweight. How did that happen?
It didn't happen overnight. It happened gradually, and part of it is just changes in our society. We look at the fact that kids don't walk to school like they used to. It's not safe to walk. Things have changed in terms of their home life. Parents are working. Food at home has changed. You know, there's a lot of parents who don't know how to cook anymore. So what they go for have for dinner is, you know, something quick, something easy. And, you know, before I came to the Department of Public Instruction, I worked as a clinical dietitian and counseled families. And I had families who told me that what they had for dinner was what they found in the store that night or what they went by for drive-through.
Right.
That was their choice.
And if you're living in a central city, I think it's appalling, Will, that there are so few good food stores in the central city. There's the food that you grow that's wonderful, but there just aren't very many places to get really good produce. So you go to a convenience store, you go to a gas station to get something. In particular, when you've had 12 inches of snow, you can't get around to get some food that might be good for you.
Yeah, I think that's really the problem. It's a problem of access. And again, this really didn't happen overnight, because during my generation, you know, we got lots of exercise and played sports and walked to school and worked in the gardens and so forth. So we got lots of exercise. But the kids today, they don't get very much exercise with the advent, of course, of all the computer games, computers, and kids are very sedentary, and you know, so they don't get enough exercise for one thing. But they don't get access to real food, food that maybe my grandmother would actually a lot of the stuff that we eat, she wouldn't recognize as food if she was alive today. Mm-hmm. So I think what we're trying to do is get back to those days. Mm-hmm. That folks really control what they their families ate, and we weren't influenced so much. I don't know if we can do much about all the influences of advertising around food that that's not good for us. So that's what we're up against. But I think the way that we can really get at this problem is through education and actually developing the infrastructure to be able to grow food, because more people are moving into our cities worldwide. For the first time ever, we have more people living in urban areas than rural areas. So we're going to have to figure out how to grow food locally, how to protect those remaining small-scale farms, mid-sized farms in America and around the world, to keep them in business, because once we lose the rest of those farms, we're really going to be in trouble in terms of being able to get food that's going to sustain us and heal us.
Right.
So that's kind of where we're at, is to now we know how to do it. We know how to grow food year-round. We've proved that we can do it in Wisconsin. We're doing it at Growing Power, so it's not a matter of whether we can do it. It's a matter of whether we have the will to do it.
Right. Jill, what about, Will was talking about the foods in schools so bad. Would you agree with that? Are school foods pretty bad all over Wisconsin?
I actually would not agree with that, because I know our food service directors are working very hard to make things healthier for students. Many of our schools are looking at farm-to-school programs that they're bringing in produce and trying to find ways to incorporate that. The school food service directors are up against a really hard place right now, that their funding is so limited in what they have to make meals and what the kids, you know, are picking, or more like what the parents are saying. So we have to really change that perception of what, you know, school meals are. And we need to give our schools the proper equipment to cook food. We need to give students time to eat. You know, these kids are rushed in and out of their meals. They have to eat so quickly, so the food ends up being what can they grab and go. And we need to look at just the whole access and affordability.
Right. I think that it's wonderful. It seemed like a simple thing, Will, and yet we've seen images of it so often, and we've seen the children who helped plant the garden at the White House. Some symbolism, some acts are extremely important, I think, and the First Lady's building of such a garden has made all of us aware of what we can do in our own backyards. I'm sure it's really helped people to start their own gardens. And I want you to talk a little bit more about the urban garden movement, how schools can incorporate gardens, and what the First Lady maybe had to say yesterday to you about the garden that she is nourishing.
Well, I think it was very inspirational this year to have the First Lady put that garden at the White House. I think it moved a lot of folks to follow her example and grow food. I think they said additional 10 million people put in gardens for the first time.
Wow.
In America. So that had great influence. I think it had an influence on our city, where I got a call from Mayor Barrett to take some flower beds at City Hall and turn them into vegetable gardens, and we trained some high school students that work for the Forestry Department to take care of those gardens, and that food went to Second Harvest Food Bank, or Feeding America it's called now. So that was a tremendous influence, and I had an opportunity yesterday to talk to her about that and really congratulate her on that, because it really energized even me. I've been farming for 50 years and working on this stuff for a long time. It really inspired me to want to do more and that. But I really want to get back to the school, because I think the schools are really a key. I think we need to reintroduce our teachers, because back in the day, teachers did teach students about food, and we did have that years ago. And I think we need to institutionalize food systems back into schools. And I agree, the schools are doing what they can, but the food that the kids are eating is not up to par. It was discussed yesterday, and the First Lady brought that point up. And that's what, one of the reasons that they're going to pour millions of dollars into the school meal programs, something that we hadn't done in many, many years. So the reintroduction of those programs is going to be very important, and everybody has to be on board. Milwaukee school board has done a wonderful job in terms of getting local foods into the classrooms, especially the elementary school. As a matter of fact, we're delivering our sprouts and some of the food that we grow year round into the MPS system each week. We deliver food into the system, so that's been a big change, and we have to do more of that. But to be able to do that and get local foods, we're going to have to grow more farmers. We're still losing farmers as we speak right now. We're losing farmland. So we're going to have to grow more farmers. And those farmers won't come from rural communities. They'll come from our colleges and universities and our programs that we have within the cities around the country. So we have to grow farmers and really clean up the soil and remediate the soil and grow compost to be able to do that. So so it's not going to happen overnight. This, what she talked about yesterday, let's move, it means to let's get started now. Because, like I said, we've done enough studies. We know what the problem is. We just have to get started, build the infrastructure, move along a continuum, have everybody on board, nutritionalists, doctors that were there yesterday, politicos, universities, everybody's got to be at the table and be working together, corporate companies, and it's everybody's responsibility.
Right. Be at the table in many ways, right? The White House was saying yesterday the figures they released is on school days, many American children consume more than half their daily calories at school. 30 million of these participate in the national school lunch program. We don't think in those terms. Many young people are getting their food mostly at school, Jill.
Yes. We have breakfast programs. We have snack programs. We have lunch programs. And it's looking at how do we meet the needs of all our students. And looking, just to say some things that are going on, to build on what Will was saying, the fresh fruit and vegetable snack program that is brought to many of our schools is one way that we're looking at bringing in, you know, high-quality produce, raw fruits, raw vegetables for students to try. And it's a highly nutritious, low-calorie alternative for a snack.
Right. And yet, I'm familiar with the eating habits of a lot of MPS students because we've had all our kids go to MPS, Will. And I got to tell you, it's pretty hard to get them away from the Cheetos and the Doritos and the Reese's peanut butter cups. And, you know, not that that's not okay to have every once in a while, but it is the mainstay of many young people's diets. I don't know, it's because they see what everybody else is eating, or it's going to create problems for a lot of these young people. And I don't know how you make the change. How do you get carrots to be just as appealing?
Yeah, I think part of it is you can't force kids today to do anything, but to make it interesting, to make it fun, starting at the early stages of life, introducing kids, and a lot of parents are starting. It's going to have to be an effort not only of the putting all the pressure on the schools, but the parents are going to have to be a part of this in terms of introducing their kids to those types of foods early on, and also have this institutionalized in the schools as food system stuff, so kids can actually grow some food.
Yes.
At school, because every school should have a garden.
Mm-hmm. I'm with you on that. That's a great idea. Jill, the president is going to be introducing legislation to get rid of candy and sugary beverages from schools. They would be required to offer more nutritious fare. I'm sure you've heard word of this. What do you think about it?
I think it's wonderful. We started out with the previous reauthorization of the school lunch looking at wellness policies, that schools were required to have a wellness policy, and part of that was trying to get at getting the candy and the junk food and the sodas out of the schools. But it didn't go far enough. So this will help schools to really put some teeth in that, to say, we aren't going to serve this here. And so much of this concession and vending sales also is a way for schools to fund some things. So it's going to be taking a real hard look and say, let's fund our education and not fund it on what our children eat.
Mm-hmm.
You know, someone's going to pay the cost, and they're going to pay the cost down the road with their health.
And what are your thoughts on accomplishing things through legislation, Will?
Yeah, I think we need to do both things. You know, we need to get our farm bill, for one thing, right for the first time. Much of our tax dollars go into supporting commodity crops, large-scale corporate industrial farm operations that grow soybeans and corn and those products. Of course, they're producing sugar that goes into all of those products that we consume and our kids consume, and we're up against those corporations that are spending so much money advertising. If you looked at the Super Bowl ads and how much money was poured into
yes.
the ads of the Coca-Cola ads and so forth, and when you consider that five bottles, 20-ounce bottles of Coca-Cola, there's over 100 packs of sugar.
Ooh.
So when you really look at that and see what our kids are consuming and how they're influenced by all those ads.
Yeah, really. Did you have lunch at the White House yesterday?
No, I didn't. I didn't.
Oh.
The event was with so many people and everything. No, I didn't. But I got a chance to. They took me on a kind of a secret tour of the White House. I got to.
What did you see?
Both the East Wing and the West
Ooh.
Wing. Well, that was pretty exciting.
So no snacks? They should have given you snacks, healthy snacks, right?
Yeah, right.
But what the heck? You can't have everything.
So, some good Potomac River water.
Let's welcome phone calls for our guests, and we'll take them in just a moment. Our guests are Will Allen, CEO of Growing Power. He was one of the speakers yesterday at the White House as the First Lady. And introduce this Let's Go initiative to take on the issue of childhood obesity. And Let's Go takes on a lot of meanings. Let's go on this legislation. Let's go on doing something as individuals and as schools. And also, let's move in terms of just moving. So we're welcoming phone calls for Will Allen, CEO of Growing Power, one of the speakers at the whole summit on childhood obesity yesterday. Jill Chamber Davidson is also with us. Jill Camber Davidson, who is a nutritional education consultant with the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. Phone lines are filled. We'll be with you in a moment. Email is talk@wpr.org. And this is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Taking on childhood obesity is our conversation this hour, and it is what the First Lady is doing. She launched an initiative, the Let's Move campaign, yesterday at the White House, and Will Allen was one of the speakers at that event. He has done extraordinary work here in Milwaukee and was invited to speak at the event yesterday in Washington. His model of urban farming has also been taken up as a model for Africa, and his whole all of his ideas are just blossoming all over the world. Also joining us is Jill Camber-Davidson, nutrition education consultant with the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. Simultaneously this week, legislation will be introduced to ban sugary beverages and candy from vending machines in schools all over the country. So we're talking about that initiative as well. We start our calls, everybody, with Tina from Oshkosh. Hi, Tina.
Hello.
Hi.
This is a subject I've been excited or angry about for a long time. And I just saw the documentary Food Inc. featuring Michael Pollan, and I was so inspired by that and angered that I bought his book. And I'm wondering if your guests have seen it, if you've seen it, and what you think about it. Also, you talked about urban gardening, and I'm also wondering where we are legislatively in terms of maybe city ordinances about raising urban chickens. I'm told that that's a movement.
Okay. Jill, you want to start?
Sure. I have not had the pleasure of seeing Food Inc. yet. It's on my list. I did see Fresh, and Will was a star in there. but I've read Michael Pollan's books, and his newest one, his Guide for Eating, I can't remember the exact title, but it's a short little book, has some really great rules. Just short, you know, don't eat anything your grandmother wouldn't recognize. It's one rule, for example. So it's just different ways to get back in touch with what you're putting in your mouth and what you're putting in your body.
Will, you want to answer?
Yes. I'm pretty good friends with Michael Pollan. As a matter of fact, he emailed me yesterday after the White House news conference. And he's been the one, I would say, academic who really gets it in terms of being able to frame what the real situation is in terms of our food situation and kind of his ideas on what we need to do next in terms of supporting small farmers and both in rural communities and urban communities and informing consumers and educating consumers. So I think he's done such a wonderful job in actually educating consumers through his writing and his books and his talks around the country. So I think that's really a key thing that we have to continue to do is continue to do that, but also, again, to go into action. I think it's time for us this year to really start building the infrastructure, supporting those farmers to be able to have a real access to local food and to grow jobs, because one of the things that we can do is grow a lot of jobs around providing healthy food as we get more folks involved in growing food. And I'm not talking about just rural farmers, because our next generation of farmers most of them probably won't come from the rural community. They'll come from our cities and our universities and so forth.
Mm-hmm. Christina is next from the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Hi, Christina.
Hi. I'm a student here. I'm supposed to be in class, but I had to listen to this program.
Oh, Christina. Okay, as long as you go to school right after you're done.
I directed a program in the inner city of Minneapolis, and it was called the Youth Farm and Market Project. It was a summer program. It was also an after-school program. So I'm connected, and I'm also connected because I grow my own organic vegetables. So my point that I wanted to say was that Wisconsin has more organic farms than anywhere else in the country, so our state is hopefully going to be the forerunner by our programs and by the things that we are doing. So I just want to remind you that we're at the forefront of it. And I also wanted to say that, like what I do with my kids, because I have been a teacher, we have had bake sales, using recipes that are wholesome, using whole grain flour, and the children not only love to make them, but they love to sell them. So it's curriculum that can be used not only with health, but also math, and it ties into so many different things using experiential learning.
I didn't know that we were at the forefront of organic farming in the country.
Yeah, Wisconsin actually is has more organic farmers than any other state. California has more more acreage, organic acreage, but we have more farmers and more farms.
Uh-huh. And Jill, I'm sure that when teachers put this into the curriculum, that there is a great pride that young people take in cooking the food and eating the food. And if you have those experiences when you're very young, you're off and running when it comes to good nutrition. I mean, not completely, there are other influences, but you got the basics here.
That is very correct. And actually, this is another thing that Wisconsin should be very proud of. We are only one of a handful of states that now have nutrition education standards. And what these are is starting out very early, pre-kindergarten, kindergarten, all the way up through 12th grade, looking at what should be, you know, included in the curriculum for teaching nutrition throughout, so that the children will get a sequential nutrition education. It does include gardening. It includes some of the Got Dirt lessons from the, you know, the gardening program, and those same lessons are being actually used with some of the farm-to-school programs that are around the state. So we're, you know, doing great strides with really bringing that nutrition education into the classroom.
Right. You want to comment on this, Will, please?
Yeah, one of the things that we're working on that has to happen, and I was an education major in college, is that colleges don't teach hands-on education, teach teachers how to teach hands-on education, and many of our students really get inspired when they touch and feel things and learn with their hands. It kind of inspires them to go on to want to learn more and to want to read and write and so forth. So I think that's what we need to do. We need to train our teachers in hands-on education. I think that's happening. And the curriculums that we're developing in conjunction with Milwaukee Public Schools, working with University of Wisconsin, Stevens Point, and getting our most vulnerable students, which are students that are in the inner city, those are the folks that are most affected by poor food.
Yes,
is to be able to work with getting our curriculums right. That we, like I said before, institutionalize this in our schools, and we have lots of land on school campuses to be able to put gardens, whether it's growing gardens on asphalt or concrete or the hard pan clay, you know, with putting compost and being able to grow gardens. And those are some of the things that are happening here in Milwaukee, and they're happening in other cities around the country. And Minneapolis, the lady that was on from Minneapolis, is one of the other cities that is at the forefront of urban agriculture. So it's really spreading. That's why I call it not just a movement anymore. It's really a revolution.
Because
corporate companies are now, we're working with 15 or so corporate companies in getting food into their cafeterias for their workers. So everybody's involved in wanting to add this to the green revolution.
Yes, and I'm not sure if those gardens will make all the difference. Let's take on the issue of cost here for a moment. This question is an email coming from Tynette. Do you, both of you, think that part of the reason more people don't buy fresh foods and vegetables is because of the cost, and therefore they resort to frozen or canned fruits? In our family, we buy the fruits and vegetables that are on sale that particular week to help make it more affordable. But overall, it seems like the healthier food is more expensive than canned or frozen, or I might even add, just not buying it at all. Jill?
In some cases, that is true, especially in areas that there is not a lot of access to fresh fruits and vegetables. If you look at the inner city, that they may not have the larger grocery store or different farmers markets or things to access the fresh fruits and vegetables. But I always tell people that, you know, you look at your fresh fruits and vegetables as something that is enjoyable to eat, that's tasty to eat, and you buy what you need. Many people will say, oh, it's too expensive, because they don't eat it and then they throw it away. So it's you buying what you need, and you plan it out. So you buy, you know, three apples and three bananas and small amounts, and it might mean another trip to the store, or it might mean beginning of the week is fresh, and then you go to your canned and frozen the end of the week when you can make it back to the grocery store.
Will, would you comment on this, please?
Yeah, I think cost, of course, when you talk about organic food, you're talking about most of the stuff that's shipped in to major cities, with only 1% of local food being produced. That comes into Milwaukee. You know, we really rely on the food wholesalers that are bringing food from 1,500 miles away. A lot of that food has lost a lot of its nutritional value. So that's another thing that we really need to talk about is the food that we eat, whether it's organic or not, is it really helping our bodies? I think, and Michael Pollan makes this point all the time, you're going to pay for it a little bit more for really good food, but you're going to pay for it later with poor health. So do you pay for it up front? And live a healthy life, and, or do you pay for it later? So that's something we really have to get across, and that's part of the educational piece that we have to educate as many people as we can. You know, parents have to be educated. We have a lot of young parents that grew up in this generation where they didn't learn this stuff. So now we're having to go back and really train a lot of parents and educate a lot of parents about what they should be feeding. But to be able to grow healthy food, people can take control by growing it themselves in their backyards and side yards and community gardens. There are community gardens cropping up all over the country. Thousands of acres of vacant land is available, especially in our Midwest areas with all the Rust Belt communities that have lost their industrial base. All of that land's available, whether it's on asphalt or concrete or rooftops. So there's lots of land, vacant buildings to raise fish. So there's lots of land. We just have to get started.
Right. And there is something so purely joyful about the whole thing, isn't there? When you, even if it's not too big a garden, when you plant your own tomatoes or peppers or lettuce or whatever, you know, I always say, this is from the garden, and I feel so proud of myself. It just makes you feel really good.
Yeah, I think one of the things that this new kind of food system that's developing all over the country, especially here in Milwaukee, is the fact that it's a communal thing, that people can work together and get to know each other and share resources, something that we haven't done in a long time. So we're seeing the rebirth of that with the food system, and it can be fun. And that's where the kids really get into it, because it's something that they can do, that they can be a part of. And hands-on education. Kids are pretty much at the same level as us adults, as a matter of fact.
Yes.
They don't bring as much baggage into the process as we do, so they're much easier to work with than adults.
Isn't it interesting, Jill, how we've forgotten all this information? It seems so basic to who we are. We are what we eat, and the fact that we have to learn all of this again is quite astounding.
It is. It's a shame that we've progressed, and that was part of just what happened. Everything became so industrialized, and we wanted everything to save time, and you know, nutrition and healthy eating was something that kind of got, you know, pushed aside. It feels like, oh, I'm going to move forward with this, and I'm going to, you know, have my convenience food and everything. And you look at other countries, and when they, you know, get their fast food and everything as a way that they're kind of like stepping up in the world, you think, oh, we're, and it's really, it's come around now that we're like, wait a minute, what's happened? We've grown so much, and we need to look back at what's happening. I wanted just to share a story with the gardening thing with students.
Yes.
That my own, I have a young daughter who was, we had a garden, and we had grown tomatoes, so many kinds of tomatoes, and she would go out there and pick them, and she said, these are so good, you can just taste the garden. And, you know, and we would joke that she eats tomatoes just, you know, like other kids would eat candy, because she just loves them. And anyone who came over, they have to have her tomatoes.
Ah, so there's nothing like a tomato from the garden, right?
Mm-hmm.
Nothing beats it. Let's go to Sue from Sun Prairie next. Hi, Sue.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I've been a longtime admirer of Will Allen and Growing Power. I was a member of our County Hunger Council, and we heard reports of the efforts to introduce new foods to elementary school kids who weren't used to eating fruits and vegetables, and they weren't always entirely successful. There was often a lot of frustration that at the end of the summer they'd go back to their chips and soda. And I think that my observation as a grandmother is that it's really important to start with obstetricians, because I think that foods that mothers eat when they're pregnant have an impact on the child's taste. And if they continue to eat healthy foods that the mother eats when she's expecting, that sets a pattern for their lives. I think that we don't start early enough. And I don't know that by the time kids' eating patterns are established in their preschool years, it's really a challenge to change that when they get to school. And poverty is such a barrier for people eating well that I think we really have to start with those who see the mothers when they're, you know, just starting out with their children, to establish those patterns even before the children are born.
Well, you've spoken on this, Will. You would agree with that wholeheartedly, I'm sure.
Oh, absolutely. I think it has to be prenatal. Expected mothers need to eat healthy food. It's got to continue throughout our lives, and it really starts there. And having folks like Dr. Pelfrey, who spoke yesterday, who represents the National Pediatrics Association, having those folks on board and having doctors now that are speaking out about preventative medicine is really important. And food being that piece of it, that medicine that should sustain us, but also to heal us if we're eating healthy food. We're definitely going to be able to fight off diseases if we're eating healthy food, and our internal organs are going to work better and so forth. That's all been proven. That's all that we've been talking about and meeting about. But like I said, now we have to spend all of our energy and going into action and making this stuff, because it's going to take many years for this to really. It's taken many years, like Jill said, for us to get to this point, and now it's going to take many years for us to fix this. And it's a worldwide thing. It's not just happening in this country, but it's happening all over the world.
Thank you, Sue, very much for the call. The other thing I liked about, I think she's a marvelous person anyhow, but the way that the First Lady introduced all of this, it's not judgmental. She talked about the fact, and we can relate to this, if you're a working mom and you don't have very much time and you got to prepare dinner too often, we may stop at convenience kinds of places to get our food, fast food restaurants. I like the way she presented this, because it gives you the inspiration that everybody can change on this, instead of hitting you over the head and saying, you've got fat kids, you know, how can you do this? It's encouraging people from where they're coming from.
Yeah, I really believe we just have to stop all this blaming.
Yeah, I agree.
Each other. We can't, you know, there's stuff about blaming everybody, for blaming Big Ag for this problem. We have to take some personal responsibility and really, we know what the issues are with all the communication and education that's out there. Now we really have to spend our energy in not blaming, because we could have more conferences on blaming folks, you know.
Right.
But I'd rather see us put that energy into really doing something concrete and starting to make these changes and starting to get our work with our school systems, private sector, working with the government, and having everybody on board. And this is really a grassroots kind of movement. It's not a top-down piece, and I think she talked about that yesterday as well. This is something that started, this movement started as a good food movement, started as a grassroots movement, and now we have top-down operators joining the movement, which is a good thing to have everybody at the table working on this together.
Right. And I would imagine, I was reading some stories about schools somewhere that were making pretty good pizzas, whole wheat dough, et cetera, and the children complained about it, Jill, for a little while. But before you knew it, they just took it for granted that they were eating a kind of pizza that was much healthier for them, and that's what was there, and they ate it. It was fine after
right.
a little while.
Right, and actually, I've tried the pizzas, and they are very good.
Are they good?
They are good, and you know, they're great. And schools are even going further, looking at low-fat dairy options and what they can do to introduce more legumes and whole grains. There are many schools that are involved in the Governor's School Health Award. We had over 30 last year that were recognized for their work in nutrition and physical activity. And it's a pretty rigorous process that you have to go through to qualify. And we are really trying to get a school to make it for Wisconsin for the Healthier U.S. School Challenge Award. I know Mrs. Obama mentioned this yesterday as a way to recognize schools that are just going above and beyond and trying to make this our standard, that this is what we're going to serve in school, and getting children to eat whole grains, getting them to eat a wide variety of fruits and vegetables and the low-fat dairy and lean meats, and just enjoying their food.
Yes. Let's welcome more phone calls in a moment. We're talking about the First Lady's initiative to combat childhood obesity, which she announced yesterday at the White House. And one of our guests spoke at that, Will Allen, who's becoming known, well, he already is known all over the world for Growing Power, which is based here in Milwaukee. Jill Camber-Davidson is a nutrition education consultant with the Wisconsin Department of Public Instruction. She is a registered dietitian, and Will, of course, CEO of Growing Power. We have time for a couple more phone calls. Our lines are filled, but just keep the number in your head, 800-486-8655. And just a reminder, we have this Facebook page. I'm trying to really make it move into new territory. So if you have ideas, and I'm sure that many of you do, you didn't get on the air and you want to talk about this great school program that's taking place so people can learn from each other, or you're growing something and you want to give advice on how to grow something, that's what the social networking is, I think, at its best. So go to our Facebook page and share your ideas, and then we can all be healthier. It's a pretty good goal, huh? So it's the Kathleen Dunn Show, and that's on Facebook. More calls in a moment. This is the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. We return to your phone calls. Ruth is next from Madison. Hi, Ruth.
Oh, hi. Thank you. This has to do with education, but it also has to do with blaming big corporations. Bovine growth hormone. And it's present in so many prepared foods. And I think if this diet was as easy and as wonderful as what our guests say, I would be thin now, because I don't eat hardly any prepared foods. And yet I can't get meat, bovine growth hormone free, unless I buy organic. And I can't get, any products that have dairy. Again, unless I buy organic, I can't get bovine growth hormone free. And so I'm prevented by the government regulations from being educated on what products actually contain bovine growth hormone. And so I can't, it's hard to avoid it. And a lot of the prepared foods and fast foods and candy foods have whey, or they have meat byproducts and whatnot in them. And they say that hormones don't survive the digestive system, and yet contraceptives and testosterone and some of the hormones for menopause and things like that, those survive the digestive system. And it's designed, bovine growth hormone, it gets cattle producing more milk, and it also gets the beef cattle to market 4 months sooner, at 14 months instead of 18 months. And so what I'm wondering is what do the guests have to say about that?
Okay. Let's start with Will. Will?
I guess a quick and easy answer for you is to know your farmer. Then you'll know your food, because I think that's one of the main things about us really looking at a local food system. You get to know where your food comes from, because if you go to a typical retail grocery store, you have no idea where that piece of meat came from. It might be cheaper than that grass-fed piece of meat that's grown by your local farmer, but you're going to pay for it in terms of your health. because you really have to know what's in the food. So I think that to me is where it's at. We have to develop a local food system. As a matter of fact, the latest survey, 85% of people polled, they want to purchase local food. But it's not there. The reality is it's not enough there. We don't have enough. If everybody all of a sudden says we're going to eat all grass-fed meat, we don't have enough production. So we're going to have to ramp up production not only with our fresh vegetables and fruit that we grow within the state and year-round. And the other thing, let's think about our schools. When school is in, most farmers are out of business. So we need to be able to get more producers to extend their seasons by growing inside greenhouses like we do at Growing Power year-round to be able to produce this food year-round by using renewable energy. Renewable energy has to be a piece of this food system to be able to do that, because using fossil fuels, we can't cash flow it that way. So it's a very complicated food system, is very complicated, but we need to start with the basics of people really getting educated and knowing where their food is coming from and what's in their food, and then we'll start giving people choices to be able to. Right now, most of the choice is to buy food that's not not healthy, and we don't know where it comes from.
Yeah. Let's go to Valerie from Madison next. Hi, Valerie.
Hi, thanks for taking my call. I'm a parent of a child in elementary school, and I was wondering if there are some grant programs one could apply to for the school to start a garden.
Jill?
There's a couple out there. The Fresh Fruit and Vegetable Grant isn't a garden grant, but it does allow you to get the fresh fruit and vegetables in. The Got Dirt Grant is one that actually provides about $400 to start a garden, and then you work with one grade level and evaluate the kid's response to it. And otherwise, looking at things that are coming down the pike, typically Team Nutrition will have some grants, and we don't have anything with gardening right now, but there may be some coming up in the future. So that would be something to keep an eye out for. And just looking at what's out there from Home Depot and Lowe's, they typically will have some type of grants that you can use for the infrastructure of your garden. And those are rolling grants. You just can apply for those, and they are nationwide, but getting that together. And I would actually bring this to your curriculum person at your school. Get a principal, get your curriculum director, get your school board behind this, because that's going to really push that. And they might even say, you know what, we have this piece of land we can use, that we can just make a garden out of it. And you may have some teachers or some seniors that will volunteer to help with the garden, especially over the summer when that watering and the weeding and everything needs to be done, or get your curriculum group to do it over summer school. Mm-hmm. Let's make this a class that we're going to do it for biology, or we're going to have this.
Sure.
You know, and then the students can do this and be outside and really experience the gardening. And a lot of times our summer school students are the ones that are at the greatest risk. So this would be a great way to get them to connect with the garden, connect with their food.
Thank you, Valerie, for your call. Let's go to Christina from Beloit next, and we're getting a little bit short on time. Hi, Christina.
Okay. Thank you for taking my call. I just had a really quick question. I'd love to get your comment on creating and transforming the school environment to embrace healthy foods. I'm a nutrition educator, and what I found is some barriers that the school environment presents is a lot of attention to teaching to the test. So oftentimes there is little room within the day to add in those extra things, even if you incorporate it across curriculum, conceptual, core curriculum components. So I'm wondering if you could address that. And also, I think that affects the time allotted for lunch as well. It's a rushed lunch, and I think a lot of time is spent for teaching to a test. Or I know that that has been an issue for a lot of the teachers that I work with.
Yeah, you got to have time for lunch. Will?
I think we can incorporate within the science curriculum education around food systems. A lot of the teachers that we're working with are science teachers, math teachers, and so forth. You can build a curriculum around math and science in our schools. As far as getting the time, I don't know that how much time they allow for meals, but meals can be prepared I think we can prepare meals that our kids can consume, especially things like what we're providing to MPS, the sprouts, which are snack items that are part of the healthiest food that one could eat. Eating more salads and things like that that could be prepared ahead of time at our schools. Many of the private schools have very elaborate meal programs with salad bars, and the kids really do eat salads. I mean, it takes time for this transformation period where kids go through that transformation, but if you're able to provide that food in time, they'll actually start eating it.
Mm-hmm.
So I think we have to have more confidence in the fact that our kids, we're in a society today that's so impatient to see change happen, you know. And change will happen if we have patience and give our kids, because we've done it with our programs.
You sure have, all over the world, yeah.
And actually gotten students to, once they have access to good food, to really stop going to fast food.
Yeah. Will, I hope you get out of town okay. We'll look forward to your coming back here. Thank you so much for being with us. Jill, thank you very much for an extremely informative hour. Thanks to Chrissy Peace for producing this hour, and to Chrissy as well for on-air production. Will Allen, CEO of Growing Powder, Jill Camber-Davidson, who is a registered dietitian with the Wisconsin Department of Public Information. Thanks for listening.